Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about shifting consciousness. We are moving into a new time, time of awakening, and there's so many truly amazing people coming forward who are, teachers of this awakening. And that's why I'm talking tonight to Amoda Ma. She is part of this new level of contemporary spiritual teachers. So thank you, Amoda, for being on the program.
Good evening, Alan. Thank you for having me on your show.
You know, you are part of a new wave of teachers that are coming forward with, I would say, an awakened message. And that means that there's a transcendence of the old dramas and the old personalities, and we're coming into a new time. That's how I feel. How do you feel about your teachings and this age we're in?
Well, I think it's both an age-old wisdom. It's been spoken about and pointed to by spiritual teachers and awakened individuals over many millennia. But at the same time, I think there's a fresh contemporary approach in which perhaps a more ordinary perspective is being put forward, in the sense that it's not about transcending the world and living the picture of a spiritual life at the top of a mountain or in a cave or being an ascetic. It's really about living it here and now in our modern world, and that's where the change is happening. That's where the transformation is happening.
I mean, there's a lot of people familiar with this type of work, I would say, but can you, and I do like to love to ask people what their moment, what their process was of going from the old personality to something saying, hey, there's more to this reality, there's more to me. Do you mind sharing your story a little bit about your awakening?
Well, yeah, sure. It's a long time ago now, Alan. It was a long journey of spiritual seeking. It was a long journey of self. I have a bad line here, so I've got a lot of background noise.
Are you hearing a lot of background noise on my phone? Okay, let me. But you keep talking, and I.
Okay, so there's a lot of work that I did on myself, a lot of soul searching and trying a lot of different methods, psychological methods and spiritual methods, mostly because I was not happy with myself. I was really looking to become a better self and to find peace with myself. And at some point, after a very long time, when I'd in some ways given up the search and come to a relative place of peace with my life, something else emerged really unexpectedly, and that was a deeper level of inner suffering, a suffering that didn't have anything to do with my circumstances. It didn't really have anything to do with how I saw or felt about myself. I can only describe it as a deep existential abyss, a sense of existential aloneness or abandonment that didn't have to do with my personal story, because I'd worked on that a lot. And it demanded a deeper level of surrender. And I was able to see that, and it happened very quickly. I was able to see that. I was able to see how my mind created distraction, how my mind created distraction by any hope of salvation in a future moment. And that might be reflected by a physical distraction, like getting up to read a book or going into the kitchen and making a cup of tea or something like that. And I just saw these real subtle movements of my mind whenever this inner aloneness aloneness would reveal itself. And it was very subtle, but it was very profound. And somehow I was able to just turn around and face it. And it was the most scary thing. It was like a death. It was like the me that I, just me, the I would die, the self would die. And it was beyond any understanding of the mind. But I was able to somehow not follow the distractions of my mind and be very still inside. And I'm not talking about a meditation practice, but just, you know, it's like I rested in this moment so deeply that I fell into the abyss, the existential abyss, and it was a death. It's like the psychological self died, the psychological sense of self died, and I felt as if I merged with an eternal emptiness that was devoid of existence. And the miraculous thing was, at the same time, I knew myself as one with the totality. So there was everything and there was nothing. And from that moment on, it was, I could only understand it after some time. In the moment, I didn't really conceptualize it. I carried on with my life. But what I noticed was that I was no longer a victim of my circumstances. I was no longer a victim of my thoughts. I was no longer a victim of my feelings. There was nothing that I was dependent on in order to feel better about myself. And that doesn't mean that I stayed in a blissful state, not at all. Life carried on in an ordinary way, but there was no moving away from presence and openness. It's like the presence is all that I am, and the openness is all that I am. And I that's how I lived. That's how life was lived from that time on. And there were times where it seemed extraordinary, and there were times where it was very ordinary. And at some point, I recognized it as awake consciousness. And it's been 15 years now, and a lot has matured within that, and a lot has integrated within that.
But that shift that happened, you were looking for it, but was there something that moved you into that shifting, into that moment where you were looked around and saw there was something more? I mean, that's the moment we're all looking for. That's why I'm trying to pinpoint it in your experience, you know?
I don't think at that moment I was looking for anything. I'd actually let go of looking at everything, looking for anything. The looking for something happened way, way before that. You know, I mean, I'd say it started when I was a child, looking for more meaning in life, looking for the answer to who am I, looking for, you know, an understanding of what is beyond this material reality. This was way after that. So I'd actually given up looking for an answer to anything or looking for eternal peace or enlightenment or anything like that. I'd actually come to a place of real okayness with my life. So there was quite a level of surrender already. So when this deeper sense of separation, it was like the core wound of separation from existence revealed itself, it was quite a surprise.
It was an awakening of the false self, though, right? I mean, there was like, I mean, the old self dissolved. What would you say? I mean, the self that you, yeah.
Yeah, it was an awakening out of the dream of separation, awakening out of the dream of separation that the self identity, the self is separate from anything at all. And it's that core wound of separation that leads to any sense of victimhood.
And that's who you, that's what you are today. I mean, that's where that's your experience of the world today.
Yes, it goes on. There's nothing can ever take that away. Nothing can cover that up. But it has been integrated into the human experience, which is where the maturation happens. And I speak a lot about that in my book. And it's what when I speak with people, because I go, you know, I speak with a lot of people now in meetings and retreats and all sorts of conferences. And the main question that comes up, because a lot of people have awakening experiences these days, as you know, Alan, it's, you know, people are having spontaneous awakening experiences.
Yes,
people have been with spiritual teachers for a long time. You know, the spiritual path has really grown and developed in the West over time. And yet, so a lot of people know the experience of awakening. They've had that glimpse, and it may last a short time. Maybe it's lasted much longer. But then the questions are still there, and the questions are, how can I really live this moment to moment in my everyday life where it has a real impact and it's not an experience that comes and goes? And it's those subtle questions that I really love to address.
But it's not an experience that comes and goes for you. It's an experience that just is, right?
Yeah, no, it's not an experience that comes and goes. It's not an experience at all. It is reality.
It is.
It's reality. It's not transcendent. It's not an elevated place. It's really seeing clearly. It's not having any closure towards life, towards my experience of life. There's no closure. There's no hiding place. There's nothing turned away from. It's a kind of nakedness. It's naked awareness, always, whatever is happening, whether the waves are stormy or whether the waves are really gentle, it doesn't matter, because that's not reality. That's what's appearing in reality.
So what is, that would be a great name for a book, Naked Awareness, but what is reality then? I mean, what is it that you call reality?
Reality is what's happening.
What's happening where? Inside you, outside you, in your mind? It's happening what? Where? Everywhere? Nowhere? I mean, I'm not sure what you mean.
What I mean by reality is the closest experience, the experience that you are having before it's labeled as anything, before it's labeled as good or bad, or what I like and what I don't like, as, because that's when we start to reject it. It's reality before we argue with it. And the majority of people in the unawake state are not seeing, are not experiencing the naked experience, the nakedness of life. It's not an open awareness. It's projected onto by likes, dislikes, opinions, beliefs, and then reality is interpreted through that lens. So I'm talking about the very naked experience of reality. When I touch something or see something, it hasn't got an overlay to it, which means that the experience of life is very intimate and it's very innocent.
Innocent means that you don't make it into anything other than what it is, you're saying.
Yes.
Is that what?
Yes.
And so, but But you, in a way, you can't teach this. I know you go around as a teacher, but how is it that you can teach this when people have to either be it, get it, or not? I mean, can it be taught? It wasn't taught to you, understand?
I don't teach it, Alan. I don't teach it. I don't teach awakening. You cannot teach awakening.
Right.
I speak to people who've been on the path of awakening for a long time, and yet who still have questions, confusions, stumbling blocks about how it's truly lived, who have been on the path of awakening, who've tasted it, who in some way know what it is, but it hasn't totally integrated. Yeah.
But they won't be able to until they just get it, right? I mean,
well, even if you get it, there's a whole maturation, integration process that happens as that awakeness, as that naked awareness, I call it, let's call it the light of awareness, starts to filter in through the human vehicle, through the human personality, through the mind-body vehicle, which still continues after awakening. Then it comes up against energetic contractions in the body and the mind, in the emotions.
And what do you mean by that?
A deeper surrender is required. Okay, so let's take the example of relationship. So say someone's awakened and realized the true nature.
Are you in a relationship, if you don't mind talking about your...
Yeah, I am actually. Yes, I am in a relationship.
Okay, great. So what happens with you in a relationship? Yes.
So say somebody's awakened to their true nature as awareness, as awakeness. And then that happens on a retreat or spontaneously at home or, I don't know, wherever, in the middle of nature or however it happens, or meditation practice or, you know, however that is. And then they're in a relationship or they have a relationship and their buttons get pushed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Because that happens. It's the... Awakening is not the answer to all our problems. It's not the answer to living a perfect life. It's the beginning.
But there are no problems after awakening. There are no problems, right? There's only situations, right?
Yes. I mean, but when we enter back into the world, people still get triggered.
So you still get triggered, even though you, in a way, can see it's all a play of illusion.
My experience of speaking with hundreds of people is that they still get triggered.
Do you still get triggered?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'm talking about when it hasn't been fully embodied, because it doesn't immediately. I talk about awakening, and I talk about what happens after awakening. And awakening is just the beginning. Awakening is the beginning of the journey. It's when the little bud pops its head out on the tree. That's awakening. It comes to know itself. Yeah? And then that little bud has to ripen or open in the sun. And that takes time. And it becomes an open flower that releases its fragrance. But the journey from a bud to a flower, in human terms, is the journey of living your day-to-day life with relationships, with work, with relationship to money and finances, with the world and its situation, and all the other things that we encounter. And that's when the clarity of awakeness or the openness of awakeness can be challenged. That's experienced as a trigger. It's experienced as a confusion. It's experienced as the question, well, I know myself as awake consciousness or awake awareness, but I still get really angry when, you know, whatever it is, the political situation or the relationship situation. And those are the questions that I get over and over and over again, because it's not a given that that openness is primary. It is after integration and embodiment, but that can take a long time. So when I work with people, when I say I'm teaching, I'm speaking to that journey. I'm speaking to that process. For me, and this, you know, I mean, there's lots of varieties and there's lots of, you know, places that people are at. But there's, you know, traditionally, relationships are not included in the spiritual journey. Traditionally, the world is not included on the spiritual journey. Yeah. And so it's okay if we're not engaged with life, you know, with everyday 21st century of life. But when we are, there's a whole process of purification that happens, a purification of the energetic contractions that we carry as habitual patterns from our personal conditioning, perhaps from our karmic conditioning, who knows, that are still carried after awakening. They don't all dissolve all at once. They dissolve if the work's been done prior to awakening, but a lot of people have not done the work prior to awakening and are having spontaneous awakening experiences, and then it's not being integrated because there's confusion around that.
Would you say the path then is harder when you're in the world of, I mean, it's easy to retreat into the mountains with the monks and, you know, lamas would maybe go, the gurus and the teachers, but you're in the world, and is that, in a sense, a different path to that's super consciousness, or is it the same path with just more obstacles to deal with? I mean, I would think it's a little different path. That's what I'm saying. There's more to this path of being in the world. Because it's easy, like Ram Dass says, it's easy to be enlightened when you're on top of a mountain, but spend a weekend with your parents.
Yeah.
And then
exactly. So, I mean, that's exactly what I'm speaking about. It's easy to be enlightened when that realization has revealed itself, when you're removed from the world. But you go back into your family situation, into your work situation, which was not traditionally part of the spiritual path, but it is today because people are on the spiritual path whilst being in the nitty-gritty of everyday life. And it's a whole different, it's not different, it's the same, but it includes more, and it includes more stumbling blocks. And I, you know, that's where the assistance come in. That's where the support and the guidance can come in.
But does it represent, I would think, an evolution to consciousness itself in a way, would you think? I mean, is it, something else that's happening within the collective psyche? I know this is a little out beyond the personal realm, but would you think this collective awakening, this individual people are having outside tradition, is a further evolution of the God consciousness? I guess that's what I'm asking there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that there is a... I think that it's like consciousness is waking up to its own nature through humanity. And that's why it's more about being in the world. And that's probably why more and more people are waking up. And so, yeah, it's definitely descending into humanity rather than just ascending out of humanity. And I do see that as an evolutionary wave.
Is it the destiny? I mean, I know you don't know, this, or no one might know, but do you feel like this is our human destiny, everyone's destiny is to come to this place, and as a culture as well?
I don't know, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know whether we'll destroy ourselves or whether, you know, humanity as a whole will evolve to, you know, a higher state of consciousness. It's impossible to know. But I, as human beings, I do think that it's our destiny to awaken to our true nature. It's like our primary purpose. We think that, you know, humanity thinks its purpose is to do more things and have more things and all this stuff. But that's a kind of secondary purpose. Our primary purpose is to wake up to who we are. And then from that place to move into the world.
So once we're awakened, I mean, it seems like awakening is just the baseline where we're supposed to start from. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like, that's ground zero. And then everything on top of that, well, what do we add on top of awakening once we're awakened? I mean, right? I mean, where do we go?
What do you think, Alan? Where do we go?
I think there's nowhere to go. I think there's nowhere to go and nothing to do. I mean, it's just being.
Well, I think that, yes, there's being, and being is the foundation, but actually being is the same as love. Love starts to grow in an environment of being. And as human beings, we're always going to be doing as well. You can't stop doing. I mean, you're not going to sit at home in bed all day for the next 50 years or however long it is. It's impossible. You still move into you're moved by an inner impulse. And my personal experience and also my observation is that as we come to know ourselves, and this knowing of who I am as awake awareness starts to imbue itself into my life, yeah, and purify the mind-body vehicle, we start to move into the world we start to move into the world from inner silence, from inner openness, from inner awakeness. And that is an impulse of innate intelligence. It's not overlaid by our egoic needs, but it's a pure impulse that wants to create, that wants to express itself, and that's the expression of love in action. And that's going to be different.
But that's everyone's innate impulse. I mean, everyone. Look at children. Their whole day is about creating and expressing themselves. I think that's innately who we are, wouldn't you say?
Yes, absolutely. It is innately who we are, and children are the best examples of that. But then it gets covered over by conditioning, and we don't move from that innate innocence or innate intelligence. We move from our egoic conditioned self, and then that's what waking up is waking up out of the egoic conditioned self. So then we return to innate intelligence, which was always there, but it's covered over. And then we return to innate intelligence, but from a much more mature and self-conscious, like consciousness is aware of itself, which is not in children. And then we move into the world as that, which is an intelligent place to move from in the world.
So you are... you're traveling around, you're experiencing this, but is there anything you want for yourself? Would you like anything personal? Is there a personal self that desires?
There's always a personal self that doesn't go away completely. There is a body here. There is a human being here that continues, but it doesn't have the need to... defend itself psychologically, to uphold itself as special, or to look for love worthiness, recognition, approval, or connection from anything outside of itself or anything inside of itself, because it is
so
that
why,
already.
Why but do people moves. Then, why would they? Yeah, you're sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
But it still moves in the world. It still expresses itself in the world.
But why
and it
would
still
anyone have
things.
A relationship? But why would anyone have a relationship if they weren't looking for something from another? I mean, I guess that's the best time to have a relationship, of course. But most people are looking for a relationship because they want approval. They want love. They
yes,
want
absolutely.
Something.
Most people look for love in a look for a relationship in order to feel loved, in order to feel connected, in order to
exactly.
feel. Yeah. Now, if you two awake individuals in a relationship, and you don't go out looking for a relationship, it appears or it doesn't appear. Either way, it doesn't matter. Either way, it doesn't matter. But when two individuals as awakeness happen to dance together, and who knows the mystery of life that brings those two together, something very different happens. Something very, very
well,
different
me.
Happens because the relationship
tell
isn't. Yeah, the relationship isn't based on the need for security. It isn't based on the need to be taken care of for comfort. It isn't based on mutual satisfaction. It isn't based on the need for approval. And it isn't based on the need to be loved. Yeah, so all the unconscious games that happen in relationship, which is most relationships. Yeah, we please, we barter, we beg, we seduce, we bully, we close down when we don't get what we want, we reject, we withdraw, or we overpower, and so on and so on and so on. We hold on to our relationship in order not to be abandoned, and we'll do anything. And these are very subtle games. You can call it
exactly. That's,
yeah. When those games aren't there. Yeah, when those games aren't there and it's totally open, it's not as if there are two people in relationship. The experience is that there's only one beingness and there's two individuals, two apparent bodies, two apparent human beings dancing inside that beingness. And it has a very different quality. It's not self-serving. The relationship isn't self-serving. It actually something starts to grow in that. And it's like a drop a drop of love that emanates and reverberates around it, and other people are consciously or unconsciously transformed by that, and it usually expresses itself as a common mission, if you like, or purpose, an outer purpose that serves something more than that relationship, and everything is given to that.
Is this what you have? I mean, not to be personal, but is this what you got in your relationship, or is it?
This is what's happened. Yes. This is what's happened. My relationship with Cavi happened after awakening. Prior to awakening, I was in codependent relationships, and I was always looking to be loved, so that I could feel like I was worthy of love. And I didn't know that at the time, but I knew that afterwards. I could see that. And when my previous relationship, which is a very long-term relationship, ended very dramatically and very painfully, I spent a long time on my own dealing with my personal sense of abandonment and all the issues around that. And I came to a place of great peace with that. And then sometime after that, awakening out of the dream of separation and the core wound of separation was dissolved. I had absolutely no need for a relationship. It's like the inner marriage had happened. It was, there was a completeness or a wholeness that could never be taken away, could never be tainted, nor could it be added to. So there was no idea of another. In fact, I didn't want a relationship. So Yeah, I was talking about my relationship and how it appeared after awakening, and how because after awakening, which was, you know, the core wound of separation had been dissolved, there was no need for a relationship. There was the knowing that nothing could add to the wholeness that I already am. And so I certainly didn't go out looking for a relationship. In fact, I didn't want one. And so then when life seemed to bring me and Cavi together, we actually started working together. I was teaching transformational workshops back then, using breath work and other methods. And he came to work with me, and something started to emerge from that. And it was like a common purpose. And the relationship was born out of that, but it wasn't born out of need right from the beginning. And so it had a very different quality that has lasted till now, 15 years later. There's none of the usual codependent interactions. It's very fresh. It's very open. And something starts to happen that's outside of that, that's beyond that.
And what is that thing? What is that thing that starts to happen? Because that's where I think you're losing most people who haven't had that experience when you say something starts to happen. Tell us what that thing is, if you can.
Love that is not conditional. And it's not the love that is just confined to each other. It's I think I said this earlier, but we might have cut out. It's like a drop. It's like a drop of love that has such power in it, it starts to impact those around it. Not because we're doing anything or saying anything, but because it has like an invisible energy field that starts to touch other people and serves a bigger picture than just the needs of two individuals. It's the only way I can describe it.
Is what? Oh, that's the only way you can describe it. But is it because you recognize something in each other beyond the personality? Would that be it?
I guess so. That's one way of seeing it. It's like there's only beingness. There's only beingness, and there's only one beingness, and we are dancing inside that beingness. And so I guess the deepest recognition is that, yeah, there's beingness here. And it's like the silence in me and the silence in him, that's what actually meets. That's where the meeting place is. That's where the intimacy is. And so it's not two egos meeting with their relative needs, with their individual separate needs, but two wholenesses meeting. And love, real love, not codependent or conditional love, really only flowers in that place.
Go ahead. No, sorry. I had a question. Yeah.
No, I can't. I was going to say something, but I can't.
Sorry. But I was wondering, did he have that awakening of that consciousness since he's been with you, or did he come into your connection with that?
Right. Well, that's a very good question. He was pretty aware, very aware, and very committed to truth when we met, and had done a lot of inner work, and then being in the relationship deepened that so that awakening really revealed itself over time. And that's also possible. So it was more of a gradual awakening rather than a spontaneous awakening, as in my case. And certainly the relationship served that, because I was deeply embodied as love. There was no So there was no looking for love. There was no need for love. I am love. And that's not a conceptual understanding. That's a very visceral, embodied realization.
That's what you feel. The you-ness that is love. But other people might not feel it from you. They might say, oh, that she's a nice person, but is she the embodiment of love? I don't know. I mean, I haven't met you, of course, but you might be, but that's what you're feeling, pure love, right?
I'm not feeling love. I know myself as that, which is openness. Love, unconditional love, is unadulterated, unwavering openness. It's naked. It doesn't hide from itself, nor does it hide from the world or from others. It tells the truth to itself always, always, which means it's not dependent on anything.
But it's
also non-judgmental. It doesn't judge. It doesn't divide itself from anything. It doesn't divide itself from the experience of life. It doesn't divide. It's very intimate with life. It's one with life. It's undeniable. You can't. Yeah, I can't say this.
But that's who we all are. That's us. That's each one of us in essence. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. 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 Yes.
Imagine a planet where we all woke up to that.
Yeah, we are that already. We're just not awake to it. Yeah, we are that. But it's covered over by this thing, this psychological construct or knot, conditioned knot of emotional and mental needs turned into opinions, beliefs, and constructs about ourselves. It's what I call the scaffolding. Yeah, we have scaffolding that we erect. This is a metaphor, but it's a kind of scaffolding that is erected as a fortress system to hide that innocent, openness, our natural state. And it's what we call us, who we think we are. Yeah, some people call it ego, but I see it as a kind of scaffolding. And these are the defense structures. These are the grievances that we hold, the resentments, the doubts, the regrets, the judgments, the opinions, the poor me's, and all of this. And
well,
get in the way when all of that comes tumbling down, when all of that is demolished by the river of awakeness that is revealed in awakening, and if we're lucky, it goes all the way, then all that's left is naked openness, the naked openness of being that we were born with and probably will die into.
But what is it that's born and what is it that dies? Just the body, you're saying, right?
No, I'm saying the psychological constructs that uphold a sense of self, a sense of me as I've created the story of me out of my experiences of life and what I like and what I don't like and what gives me what I want and what doesn't give me want and where I'm loved and where I'm unloved, that all creates the construct of self.
But you can separate the psychological constructs from the true essence of being, can't you?
The psychological constructs have fallen away.
They've all fallen away. But you don't have any psychological constructs, you're saying?
I don't have any defense systems. Yeah? I mean, we've all got a psychology.
Okay.
We've all got an inner psychology, of course.
That continues
as part of the human being. But the scaffolding that's erected to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves from the experience of life, in other words, the argument with life, it creates an inner division, the divided state which most of humanity is operating in, which is why we have war and violence and terror and, you know, whatever else, you know, leads on from that. That's the inner divided state. Me against you, me against the world, me against reality, me against life, me against God, because I'm so small that I need to get something from that in order to feel better about myself. When that inner division is no longer in place, which it's not in awake consciousness, then we move from a different place. We still have a psychology, we still have a personality, we still have a body, but we're not moving into the world from a divided state.
But I also want to ask you about that, the body, because it seems like when you go to that place of that transcendent self, something does start to accelerate within the body. There are physical sensations that are signs of an acceleration, would you say, or is it just the same old body over and over? Because it seems like something else is going on physiologically.
Right. I think the nervous system releases its stress. You know, the nervous system releases the habitual contractions that are the fight or flight response, which still has to happen when we're, you know, crossing the road and about to get run over by a truck. But I mean on a psychological level. So we're not responding out of that agitated nervous system. My experience of awakening is that the nervous system comes to a deep relaxation. It's almost like purified of its conditioning. Now, it depends. I mean, some people carry more trauma from the past than others. And I know I've done that. I've had that because I've had a lot of traumas happen in my early life. So that took a while to unravel, if you like. But
is there an acceleration of vibratory shift physiologically somehow? I mean, like an ascension, not to like use that sort of cliche word, but some people have said that is where we're moving into as we transcend the old personalities. There's a quickening of sorts.
I don't really know, Alan. The body is experienced still, but it's just like the senses are open. To me, the fireworks of physical symptoms or physical sensations does not necessarily go with awakening. It might do, but it's more about that being a release of energy rather than a sign of awakening.
I see. A release.
It's not necessary. I mean, to me, that wasn't the case. I mean, I'd done a lot of energy work prior to that, so maybe that has an impact that, you know, I've done so much work through the gateway of the body, so much expansion of energy, energetic experience, that in some ways the body was very open already. It wasn't carrying blockages. So maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't, but I don't know about ascension and I don't know about a quickening. I do know that we become exquisitely sensitive to all energetic movements, and that brings a sweetness to life.
Right. But, yeah, no, I think so. But do you find yourself going into a deeper state of meditation as well, or places like that, inner places, that because you don't have the same baggage in the way, to get to those deeper places?
Yeah, when there's silence, there's silence. You know, when there's, you know, that silence, that beingness, that inner sanctuary of silence, it's always here. I don't need to go into meditation to find that. It's always here. But, you know, yes, if I'm sitting in silence more formally, then there's a falling into it and a resting in it without the overlay of the mind that's trying to get anywhere.
It's very what you say?
Simple. It's very simple, natural state.
But in this state of transcendence and peace and silence, there's a there's something more happening for you, right? Because you are found a place of silence that's not so easy to find.
When you say more, something more happening, what do you mean by that?
There's a greater awareness. It's like you're because the mundane is not filling the monkey mind, there's more of a chance to look around in beingness.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that happens all the time. That awareness doesn't go away whether I'm in silence or not in silence.
But when you're in silence, though, isn't something less engaged? Because the act of speaking is an engagement on some level of personality, right?
Yes, for sure. No, well, there's less of an engagement with the three-dimensional world, which means that there's a deeper inner resting. But
there's no preference to be there or not be there. You'll take whatever comes, or would you like to be in the resting more because that's your natural state?
I mean, I'm really quite busy in the world these days, and I don't experience that as much of a pull away from inner silence. You know, awareness is here whether I'm busy or not. I'm in openness always. But I hear what you're saying, and I think there have been times in my life where having that opportunity to have extended periods of no engagement with the world actually have been incredibly nourishing. I don't particularly go looking for them anymore because I am totally okay with how life is, and I'm given to that. And if that's the way it moves in my life, that's the way it moves. So I don't see an opposition in that. But there have been at various points in my life over the past few years opportunities to just not engage with the three-dimensional world as much as usual. And definitely there's a kind of rapture that happens in that. There's a kind of deeper merging with the God essence. But like I said, I actually don't crave that or look for that because there's no separation anymore. Yeah. There's no separation between the human and the divine.
Mm. But so tell me what happens in your workshops. You're going to be doing a workshop in Kripalu. What is the date for that?
Kripalu is December the 3rd to the 7th. It's a 5-day silent retreat.
Oh, that's coming up. Okay.
Yeah. So a silent retreat will be in silence the whole time. So there'll be no conversational or social chatting at any time. So everybody's in silence, but throughout the day, there's two sessions with me. Two formal sessions in which we do
Do you speak in the sessions?
In the sessions, it's a dialogue and inquiry session. So I will say something. I will, bring forth some kind of discourse, pointing to the silence, and that's always spontaneous. So I don't know what that is, but it'll be appropriate for that moment. And then from that place, I will invite questions so that people are looking within as to how they can deepen into that inner silence and really telling the truth about what's in the way of that. And then that's the beginning of inquiry. And then we'll also have longer periods of formal silent sitting, maybe some guided meditations, although I don't do a lot of that. And it's a really wonderful way to do what you just said, Alan, which is really rest within, to deepen into beingness without the distractions of the three-dimensional world, the earthly, daily life.
Wait, so those dates are December 3rd, you said?
Yeah, December 3rd to the 7th.
So that's 4 days, but you arrive on the 3rd and leave on the 7th, so it's really Like, how many days of silence, pretty much? It's four, six, at least three whole days, right?
Well, it should be more than that, yeah. We'll start on the, I can't remember the times because Kripalu has its own, you know, program. But we start the silence that the evening that we meet on the first day, and then it'll finish on the final day, which I think is probably around midday. I can't remember.
Right, and
so it's not that long. It's not that long, but something happens in that, which is that, you know, time starts to become eternal.
No, it's great. I've been on silent retreats, and it's really, really transformative for sure. But are there other retreats coming up? Are you doing more? Where's your work taking you now?
Well, I've just finished a retreat here in California. That was a 5-day retreat. That wasn't silence, and that also has a great beauty to it when it's not silent, because we can be with each other in intimacy and in beingness. But that's just finished. There will be a new schedule for 2018. So there are some upcoming retreats. Right now there's one planned in Washington, and then there'll be one in California. In between, there are talks. I'm speaking at a yoga festival. I'm at the Omega Center.
But when are you at Omega? When do you go there?
In August.
Oh, that's a great place. Maybe I'll see you there. Are you coming to New York at all when you're at Kripalu?
Not at Kripalu, but either before or at, you know, around the time of Omega. Maybe before. There's a possibility that I'll be doing some speaking in New York before that. But
and where are you based? Where are you based out of mostly? Northern California?
Right now, I'm in the Bay Area.
I see. And that's your home base there, right?
It is for now, but, you know, you never know.
Do you ever go back to England? Because you are English, right, originally?
I am English, yes. I have not gone back to England, and neither has Cavi, since we arrived in the United States, which is just over a year ago.
Is he English too? Your relationship.
He is English.
Person?
Yes, we're both English. But we moved here, you know, just over a year ago, and so this is our home.
And why do you care to be here?
Why do we care to be here?
Yeah, or as opposed to anywhere? Yeah, I'm just curious.
Again, who knows what the mysterious forces of life's fate are, but that's where it's brought us, partly because, you know, on the surface reason, Alan, is that my teaching is growing here. I get invited here. I speak at conferences here. My book is published here. And it's a lot more juicy in that way, because there are a lot more seekers. And it seems to be the place where people respond to what I have to offer. And so that's on the surface level. That's on the surface.
Yeah.
On the hidden level, the invisible level, Cavi and I have in some ways outgrown England. We've both been there a very long time. It's been a place of relative hardship for us, both from our backgrounds, although that's a long time ago now. And we don't have any real roots there, in the sense of family and things like that. And we both feel like pioneers, and always have done. And the pioneering spirit is still alive in the United States, even though it's covered over by a load of things. And we just feel energetically drawn to be here. It feels kind of karmic in some ways. It feels like an old, old journey that we've lived before. And it just felt absolutely right to do it, and take the leap, and in some ways start a new life. So that's on a kind of, you know, invisible level, and everything conspired in our lives to make it possible.
Well, that's exciting. How long have you and Cavi been together, if you don't mind me asking?
15 years.
15 years, and
yeah.
it still has that freshness of just being, huh? Because it's
totally,
it's not,
yeah.
That's
yeah,
very
it's
amazing.
Like, you know, one of the things I was going to say about relationship from this space is that it's like the tenderness and the non-judgment are so primary and so sweet, and it's not something that we have to work on. And you know, that's very fresh. That's where the love is. It's not like we're going out of our way to be nice to each other. It's just what happens. It's like when there's no inner division, then you don't act or think harmfully towards yourself or towards anyone else. It's impossible, you know, because there's only one beingness. So what are you harming? It's ridiculous. So it has that flavor to it. Yeah.
No, it sounds very lovely, but I mean, I know you mentioned it before. Do you have a little more time? Because I just wanted to ask you, because, you know, you do talk about the personal hardships and the struggles, but for people listening who may still be going through that, what was your experience there? I mean, you were depressed. You had hardships. I mean, in a way, they're not the same person you are now, but what were they? And is that why you were think you were a spiritual seeker, because you wanted to deal with that? So I'm just curious.
Yeah. The hardships started when I was born.
How can you explain that? What happened? I mean, if you don't mind.
My father left, my real father that I never knew left when I was born. That created a lot of hardship for my mother, and a lot of shame and a lot of secrecy and all sorts of, you know, hidden things were happening that she carried. I was brought up in that environment. I didn't, you know, I didn't even know that the man who I thought was my father wasn't my father. There were lots of shocks essentially in my life. There were lots of, like, the ground shaking beneath my feet, or the, you know, the ground being destroyed beneath my feet, just shock after shock and trauma about my roots, my ancestry, the man who was my father. There were problems there. The man who I thought was my father, there were lots of problems in that relationship. There was violence and abuse. We experienced a war when I was 13, because that was not England. I lived in England, and then I didn't live in England for a couple of years. Lived outside
of
England.
You experienced war? What kind of war? Where were you?
We lived on a small island for 2 years. It's the island of Cyprus.
Now
a divided country between Turkey.
I know.
Yeah.
I was in Cyprus, not probably when you were there, but yeah. Yes,
yeah, so this was 1974, so that war was very, you know, obviously a shock.
Were you on the Greek side? You were on the Greek side when they were invaded by the Turks, huh?
Well, the whole thing was Greek before it was invaded by the Turks.
Right.
So there was no side.
Right.
There was no side then. It was just Cyprus,
right,
which is a Greek island.
Right.
Or a Greek Cypriot island, and then it got invaded by Turkey. So we lost our home, we were evacuated, we lost everything, came back to England with no clothes, with nothing. So that was a shock. I didn't go to school, I was mute. I couldn't
you
speak.
Were mute? Wait.
Yeah.
You were mute means that you had your psychology overcame your ability to speak, or you were just so traumatized, huh?
I was traumatized, yeah. Wow. I was traumatized. I didn't have the support from my parents. I had a very sensitive nervous system, so, you know, shock after shock after shock.
And then what was it that, you know, because I think, I appreciate you telling us this, because I do think people need to hear, I mean, especially if they're going through similar things, that it is possible to be relieved from that, wake up out of that. So
it is possible, but you know, going back to your question, yes, I started my path of emotional, spiritual inquiry, really because of all the pain that I carried, because I was in my 20s, I was clinically depressed, I was suicidal, attempted suicide several times. And very unhappy.
You were unhappy because of all the dramas and the suffering and the shock.
Well, I didn't know that. I just shut myself off inside. I didn't know that I was unhappy because of my history. I just shut myself off from everything. And shut myself off from feeling. So then I you know, the personal journey that I went on was really to address that deep unhappiness. But it is possible to wake up out of it.
No, but how did you turn it around? I mean, you went on the journey to find out, but then something else clicked in there, right?
Well, the journey was the process of unraveling some of those wounds and beginning to face them, which I hadn't done up until that point. So that was extremely transformative. And then at some point, I mean, I did a lot of psychotherapy. I did a lot of energy work. I did a lot of breath work. I did a lot of catharsis. And who knows what else, a whole load of other stuff.
But do you think that propelled you even further, as opposed to if you were just a sort of normal person with a normal, you know, household trying to just fit in? Is the extremeness of your situation, did that actually fuel this greater awakening?
Yeah, I think so. For me, and I don't really talk about it very much anymore, but because it's just not, you know, always relevant. But to me, suffering was my doorway to liberation. It was like there was no way out in that suffering. I could work on myself forever. And a lot of good work had been done. But at some point, the futility of trying to be a perfect person according to my idea of what a perfect person is, the futility of that was totally seen, and that started a different journey in some ways, one that wasn't about looking for the answer through some modality or some therapy or some teaching, but a much deeper inner journey of surrender to what is. And that's what took me to that moment of awakening out of the dream of separation.
So in a sense, you were propelled by the suffering you went through.
Yes, I think so. Well, that's my experience, yes, was that the suffering was the very catalyst to that. It was like the grit in the oyster that created the pearl. So for me, that was my journey. I mean, it may not be somebody else's journey, but my invitation is that suffering is a potent, when it's here, if it is here, then it's the potent doorway.
But you can't tell the person that when they're in it, you know, if they're in the suffering, it's hard to see, wow, this is perfect for your awakening.
No, of course not. But you can invite, and that's what I do, is I invite the other to be soft with that, to be soft with the suffering. You know, and there's all sorts of ways of inviting that in, so it's at least turned towards rather than run away from. And of course, suffering is suffering, you can't take away that. But to understand, even just to have a little glimpse of understanding, that it's not a punishment, and it's not a burden that you carry for life. But it is the invitation to soften. It is the invitation to be more intimate with what's at the core of the suffering. Not the story of suffering, not the poor me of the suffering, but the very, very essence of it as an energetic experience. And my experience is that people do respond to that.
But what is that? Okay, someone's suffering, they're miserable, let's say they're poor, like you, or you said you were homeless and all that, and they're suffering, and so at the core of that suffering is what? I mean, it's the part that, yeah, of course, is eternal, because I can suffer, but in that moment of being, whatever, rejected or in fear or pain or despair, what is that thing at the core of that?
Well, there's layers. First of all, there's the story of poor me. And so that's one layer. And then there's other layers of feeling inside that, of loss, of heartbreak, of terror, maybe, of heartbreak is usually the one that opens, unlocks the key, if you like. If we can open to heartbreak without the story of poor me, which is on the surface, then it opens to love. It opens to deep acceptance, not a deep acceptance of the story of suffering or the circumstance of suffering, but to the very reality. It's here. We stop arguing with it. And then from that place, we can choose to do something about the circumstance or to not, if that's not within the realm of possibility. But there's a deep acceptance of something. Yeah. And from that place, there's a transformation.
Is it also the fact that you can observe your suffering and step away and know that you're not your suffering? You can just be witness to it. Is that something you talk about, or is that another tradition?
Well, I think you can. That's another way. It's like the other side of the coin. I tend to find that approach ends up as denial. It ends up as a numbing out of feeling.
Right.
And I guess my approach and what I found more valuable with people is to actually invite an intimacy with that, not a running away from it or a kind of denying it or becoming, you know, just awareness. And then there's this suffering out there, because that doesn't actually change it. That just cuts you off from it.
So you become intimate with the suffering. Or the pain, whatever that is. But I'm not sure what that means. What does that mean to become intimate with it? To not run away from it, I guess. What does
that
mean?
To really face it, to really come into it, to really open to it as, you know, to really open to it as an energetic experience, which brings you to heartbreak. When heartbreak is here, the heart is broken open. When the heart is broken open, it's open wide into its natural state as openness. And that's love. That's acceptance. That's oneness. That's the end of war. That's the end of inner division. That is wholeness. That is liberation.
Mm. I get that now. Thank you. Sweet, beautiful. Yeah, and it's in that moment that you are in as a teacher, as a being. Is that it? Is that where you're speaking from in your workshops? You would say.
I think so. Yeah, you could say that. That's a way of saying it. Yes.
I mean, that place of pure love, that love place.
Yeah, it's speaking from that. It's living from that. Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you, Amoda. Is there anything else that we should talk about? I mean, I think, I could also say you do have 3 books out, Change Your Life, Change Your World, Radical Awakening, and Embodied Your Enlightenment, your latest book, Living Your Awakening in Every Moment. I have that book, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that the recent book is where I really speak from the place that we're speaking from now. Many of the things that we've touched on, I'm really going into that quite deeply and speaking from this openness, talking about relationship, talking about work, talking about all the things, suffering. So that would be the book that's the most.
Yes.
you know, relevant for our times. Yeah.
Right, and for your work, and for so your teaching's evolving. It's deepening. It sounds like. I mean.
Yeah, it has evolved and deepened over the years. Yeah, for sure.
Imagine, I'm just saying, imagine if everyone was in that place, there would be nothing to teach. It'd just be, I mean, if we had a planet like that.
Oh, that's right. There wouldn't be anything to teach. There wouldn't be, you know, we wouldn't have to speak about it. We wouldn't have to point to it because we'd be living it.
But that.
So then I'd be out of a job.
You'd be out of a job, but the world would be. But that's where we're. That is the point of the job of your work. Is
absolutely, of course. And then something else would happen. That impulse, that innate intelligence, would move in a different way, and who knows what that way is.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. Well, thank you. Stay in touch, you know, with me, and let me know if you are coming to New York at all. Definitely.
Yeah, that's lovely. And, I will definitely let you know if I'm coming to New York. And thank you for your time this evening and the juicy conversation.
Yes, no, I'm interested because, you know, it hits points of my own realization where it's like, okay, yeah, I've had glimpses of this and this and this. And, yeah, I just. Helps me connect the dots a little bit. I guess that's why you also are teaching, because you're talking to people who have some idea of what you're talking about. So that's
yes.
Part of it.
Yes. Yes.
You're not speaking to a poker club or anything like that, but, you know, card games. But
No, I get it.
And I think it's important to keep that conversation going because I think the more we are in the conversation, the more we realize the truth of what's being said. And so this is a collective movement in that way to our, you know, social awakening as a society, as a cultural evolution. That's why I'm doing the program here, is to put that out there to people who are looking for other possibilities or reminders or confirmations of their beingness.
Yeah, it's like love is speaking to love, or being is speaking to being. And for some reason at this stage of our collective evolution, that's what is happening and that's what needs to happen. And it is a kind of reminder. It's not that we're actually teaching anything, but, you know, having these kinds of conversations, or, you know, doing what I do, which we're calling teaching, but it's not really teaching. It's really just love speaking to love. And in that way, it wakes up in the other. It wakes up in the other, and that's how love grows, and that's how love evolves in humanity.
Let me just ask you one final question. Is there a new feminine frequency? I see that on your website. What is that? What do you mean?
Well, I don't speak about that a lot, but what I'm referring to is an aspect of awakening which is surrender, which we've spoken about a lot, that is often missed out in a lot of traditional spiritual teachings. Not all of them, but where the patriarchy has taken over spiritual teachings. This
you mean formal religion? Is that you mean religious-wise? Is that what you're saying? Formal
religious-wise, and, you know, spiritual traditions from Eastern traditions, where the emphasis is very much on the transcendent states or the awareness side of things. And then there's a deeper surrender, or the element of surrender that is part of spiritual awakening, but isn't often spoken about. And then the descent of that into our humanity. That's where we started this conversation this evening, and that's where we're ending up. The feminine is the embodiment aspect of it. It's going through the mind, through the heart, into the body, and out into the world to include the world. Jesus spoke about this. That's Jesus's vibration, but it's not often the more traditional spiritual tradition that misses this part out, and it is about removing from the world, it is about transcending the world, and so on and so on. We're talking about the inclusion of the messy human experience, which you could call a feminine aspect. I don't really focus on what's feminine and what's masculine, but if we're going to use words, that was just one way to point to it.
The messiness is the feminine, you're saying?
We could describe the messy human experience, the embodiment, as the feminine. Yeah, the feminine is in the world. It's through the body. It's not just in the rarefied field of the mind and higher consciousness. It's about embodying. This is a whole other conversation or continuing conversation that probably needs to be dissected a little bit more as to exactly what we're speaking here.
I know that's traditional. I mean, in a sense, what people talk about, the non-embodied essence as the male part and the matter mother part as the feminine.
Yeah, it's the one that gives birth, and birth is messy.
Right. Right, but I think we're here to be the embodiment of both parts.
It is, exactly. It's both parts. It's presence and openness. It's
and
divine and it's human.
Yes, and that's new, I think, as a collective. That's what the old mystics, the old ascetics, those living in caves didn't have, and missed a part of their own awakening because they weren't involved in that. And I think this is why a new spirituality is exciting for people.
It's more challenging. It's the marriage of masculine and feminine within. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we'll have another conversation about that at some point.
Okay.
But thank you so much. So your website is Amoda Ma.
Yes.
Amoda, AMODAMAA.com, AmodaMa.com. So thank you, Amoda, or Amoda Ma. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan.
A guest on New Realities, and they can find you at your website and your events and your teachings and your books. And it's always interesting for me to talk about this because it always is, in a way, the same conversation, isn't it?
Yes, it is, with lots of different expressions.
Right. But I always enjoy because it always reminds me of what I am, what it touches upon. My name is Alan Steinfeld. This program is New Realities. And for those listening, I will be on a new time this Saturday, starting on Saturday, every other Saturday. So on Station 1 at 9 p.m. Pacific Coast time or 12 a.m. East Coast time. So you can listen to New Realities there. You can also check the website for this program, the archives, that is, of bbsradio.com. Go to bbsradio.com/New Realities for a whole past 8 years of programs about awakening consciousness, possibilities, UFOs I would even throw in there, and whatever else might be possible in this time of transformation. So thanks for listening. And if you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com, or email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Good night.